You're listening to Bedroom Beethovens, where notable music makers break down stories accompanied by songs and melodies documenting growth through their 10,000-hour journey. And me? Well, my name is Cello, your host.
What's up? This is J-Rock, and I'm right here. I'm chilling on the Bedroom Beethovens podcast. That's what it is. Let's go.
Welcome, people of Earth, to episode 171 of the podcast. Since I knocked the world off its axis, people want an axis for a special kind of access. Problem is, we don't know you. My guest this week is...
My name is DJ Skiz. DJ, obviously a producer. I have collaborated with Freeway, Rock Marciano, Sean Price, a lot of people. To name a few, those are just on the top of my head. Wow, he's a student of the game. We pass the class because nobody can read you dudes like he do. These cats are jaded, trying to do what Jay did, wasting studio time, getting faded. Said you had a classic, that shit was C-graded, get degraded, and I don't worry about karma from cats we shaded. Sky's the limit, my light shines bright, no matter who tries to dim it. Shit hits hard, whether you're in Brooklyn or in Decatur. Your music's just an indicator of a shitty ass time and rap. Escape the ringtone era, and now they peddling.
Back with another episode with the prolific radio host, a DJ, producer extraordinaire, DJ Skiz, who teams up with the ever-prolific New Jersey rapper, Crime Apple, for a new album. And what better time than now to reflect on a career, to highlight the ins and outs, relationships, advice, and more in another episode of the podcast. And as we enjoy the temperature cool downs and the pumpkin spice lattes, I want to remind you to support the podcast. Visit patreon.com/bedroombeethovens and give a buck or two to support the show and keep it ad-free. Show your love and I'll show it right back. And the engine needs to keep chugging along. So if you're binge listening or a longtime fan, subscribe, rate, and support the show wherever it is you get podcasts. Shout out to the J57, the 5-7 Collective, everyone that used to work at Fat Beats, Screamers Pizza, Brooklyn, everyone. This episode is for you guys. I appreciate the love. Enjoy the episode. Well, it's a great time to have this conversation because I think you're now certified industry vet. You know, happy 10th anniversary to the Kings from Queens mixtape.
Oh, I appreciate that.
And the BQE album came out like a week from now, so that anniversary is coming up in a couple days too.
Didn't even realize that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's funny, you know, J57 and I, we talk all the time, and I asked him why Brown Bag wasn't on BQE, and the story goes, and I quote, you know, he created the song back in the summer of 09, made a cool tune, but then I got to say by like 2011, Skiz became Skiz 2.0.
No doubt. Shouts to J57. That's a good dude right there. This was pretty early on in my, you know, I was kind of getting my sound together and, you know, still learning a lot and trying to work with a lot of different people. But that, you know, I knew Jay from Fat Beats, and I was able to do a track for them. But it was definitely didn't fit the sound of BQE.
Well, like we talked about before I hit record, you know, Marco Polo came on this podcast a few years ago when you were him in Colombia. It was right after his father passed, so it was kind of a weird time for him. But he spoke really highly of you, I remember, because I think it was just the two of you, you know, and I could tell you guys weren't just friends, like you were brothers. So around the time that, you know, BQE came out, obviously you knew him back then, but you could kind of lean on him for advice. He was kind of like a psychiatrist, because making an album, like you just said, it was new for you at the time and you didn't know the roadblocks you would face. You know, it could be really frustrating. So a lot of it is dealing with other people's schedule, waiting on people to get their verses in, or when you get verses, hey, you might have to reject them. Are albums made the same way 10 years later? Or are you a Jedi at this shit now?
Man, I mean, nah, it's, well, first of all, yeah, everything you said is very true. You know, Marco Polo, he's my brother and he's taught me a lot. You know, I'm just grateful
for all that and for knowing him. He's just a good dude. And early on making that BQB record, it was, yeah, I mean, very, it can be very frustrating, as you said. Like, it's just working with other people, trying to, yeah, you're just working with a lot of personalities, you know, and you're trying to put everything together, and it's just a tough process. And he did help, you know, during that time. But I think, I'm trying to remember back then, I feel like that was, we were hanging a lot then, but I feel like he was definitely influential in that, and definitely a psychiatrist. He still is my psychiatrist, you know, in this industry. We're each other's psychiatrists, you know what I'm saying? We definitely, yeah, talk about the bad stuff, the struggles, and also the successes along the way. So he's an important part of my career and just, you know, my life, basically. You know what I mean? My brother.
I hate asking this because it sounds like clickbait, but whose verses did you have to reject?
Okay, well, there was a couple songs that I put as like bonus cuts. It was Psycho Less, Milano, another one with YSP, and so they just didn't really fit the album, but I still released them eventually, and they're still dope joints to me. But and it wasn't because the verses weren't it. It was more just like the sound and overall song.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, rejecting Brown Bag, you know, they still love you. They get it, you know.
right.
What is the attitude of most rappers when they don't get on the project they intend to get on? Do they sometimes get into their feelings, or for the most part, they kind of understand?
Yeah, it's happened to me before, where somebody got upset about it, you know, because it is time spent, and you know, and I get it. It's time spent, and nobody wants to spend time on something and it not work out, or you know, not fit whatever it's for. So yeah, it's happened. And but generally most people, you know, understand. I mean, it's a process, and you're trying to create something with a particular vision, and if it doesn't fit that vision, then you know, do another one.
Yeah, and it's like they say, you know, it takes 10 years to be an overnight sensation. Like you did a decade plus at the halftime radio show, and maybe you didn't view it as like, the longer I'm here, the more clout or opportunities I get. But still, I mean, you put in years and years at that craft.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I started to DJ, you know, back when I was like in high school, and I put in that work. The production stuff didn't happen till later, but you know, all that DJing and listening and studying definitely, you know, helped out, you know, to be where I'm at now. And, you know, I'm still, and it's just still a process, you know, I'm still working at it. I'm still trying to learn. And I think, you know, you can't rely just like on your old stuff, you know, you just got to keep going. So keep creating, trying to break new barriers, make new sounding stuff, and, you know, work with different people. So still a process. But that halftime shows, you know, all that time on the radio, meeting people, building relationships, and just absorbing everything I could was huge, obviously. You know, that's just, you know, being in the culture like that, meeting these, like, you know, incredible artists, you know, from people who are huge now, like Kanye West and RZA and all these people, to like, you know, underground acts, and just that whole time was incredible.
Yeah, I'm doing the shit out of my closet in the suburbs, and it's fucking hard. You know what I'm saying? You get to interview,
absolutely.
Yeah, you got to interview RZA and Kanye West, and you know, I could, you know, I'll never talk to those people about this because I don't know if they'll relate. But it's like you know, you and I just met, and yet it's kind of my job to make this episode appear like we're old friends and having a conversation. You know, it takes a certain skill set to do that, because music producers, they're used to being in the labs and make music. A lot of them are introverts. You know, it's hard to do that.
I mean, I am pretty much, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm pretty much like an introvert. The radio stuff, over time, I became more comfortable with it, like interviewing. But I did the show with DJ Eclipse, shout to Eclipse. And he was definitely more of the host of the show, more of the, you know, doing most of the interviews. I would always do them when he would go on tour with Nonfiction, or whatever. So, you know, it was something where it was not you know, it didn't come natural to me. You know what I'm saying? I'm definitely more of an introverted person. Definitely, you know, more of, I like to be in the lab, you know, just being creative. But yeah, I mean, you know, something I had to do, and, you know, hopefully some of them were good interviews, but it's definitely not, I don't think that's my thing. You know what I mean?
Well, how do you approach that? Like, when you interview Nas, can you kind of tell maybe he doesn't want to be there, or he needs to come out of his shell? Like, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, that was actually a memorable one in that way, because I remember, you know, I was super excited, obviously, to have him on the show. Eclipse was gone. PF Cutton, I had him come up and DJ with me. You know, at first, Nas was, he seemed very just kind of like, I don't know, just, yeah, it was tough to break through. Like you said, it was just tough to break through and make it feel comfortable and like we were friends, like you said. It just took some time. After a little while, he opened up and he became, you know, more comfortable, and he even rapped and stuff like that. But that was a tricky one. You know what I'm saying? And maybe it was also just because of the fact that I was just like, this is like God, you know what I mean? To me, he's somebody that, you know, I always thought was like the greatest. And so I was probably a little just starstruck, you know what I mean? So it was, but that was very memorable, you know, but it was always tough, man. Like some of those interviews were tough for me because, yeah, like I said, it's not my thing. And,
It's funny though. There's probably some B-roll footage of you and Eclipse on that Netflix documentary with Kanye. Kuti started filming that in 1998, so he would have already been at it for 3 years by the time you guys met and he came on your show.
Absolutely, I thought about that, and there was a lot of artists who had people coming up with their camcorders and stuff like that, doing videos at that time. I think it became kind of the thing to do around that time. And I'm sure, yeah, it's definitely possible that Kuti had footage from that night when he came up with Rhymefest, and they were battling on the air, him and Rhymefest, and that was another very memorable show. That back in 2001, it was like right after 9/11.
Another reason why I think it was prolific is, and this could be hearsay, but Kuti got burned once recording Kanye at MTV. He had this idea called The Life with John Monopoly, and it was supposed to cover the urban lifestyle of the rich and famous. And he actually had an episode with Cash Money and another episode with Juvenile. And he was at MTV and he shared the idea with Ananda Lewis from MTV and telling her about the idea. And then next thing he knew, here comes MTV Cribs. So yeah, maybe after that, he felt MTV stole his idea for the show. So what's funny is he didn't like Kanye going to radio shows and TV shows after that. He rather kept the Kanye filming to the studio and the streets. So if there was footage of Kanye at that radio spot, it might have been like the only footage of him at that time, except for like Sway or someone like really big. But I think your show was like the only one.
At that time, college radio just in general was really important in the industry. And it was just, you know, it's so different now, obviously, with the internet and with satellite radio and all that stuff. But beyond like, you know, the commercial radio spots, I mean, we were really the place that labels would want to send their artists to have their stuff heard and to promote. So, yeah, I mean, and of course, we were in New York. So, you know, this is where all the labels are, you know, where just, you know, people would come regardless of where they're from. Like Kanye, had to come to New York. And so we were that spot. And so, yeah, this is pretty wild.
So every Wednesday for 15 years. And in 15 years, how many weeks of work did you miss?
Not too many. You know, I had a couple surgeries, like health stuff that I had to miss. But yeah, man, I mean, it's pretty much every Wednesday for 15 years. It's wild to even think about that and just the consistency. And it just became kind of, yeah, just like the thing every Wednesday night, 10:30 to 1 a.m. Thursdays were sometimes really rough because of that. But yeah, I mean, it was pretty much every Wednesday, man, for those 15 years, minus a couple shows, for sure.
It's good work ethic, though, and a lot's changed in the last 10 years or so. So it's, I mean, 10 years ago, Frank Dukes ruled hip-hop. Now he doesn't even make rap music anymore. Ten years ago, Good Kid, Mad City came out, and you said you didn't like the beats on the album, and that album is now a rap classic.
I said that?
Yeah. I was watching an old interview with you and J57, and they wanted to test the barometer, and they asked you, and you're like, you know, he's amazing, but the beats are kind of
yeah. That's interesting. But I mean, when I listen to the album now, and my feeling on the album's definitely changed. I would say like that shit is a classic. And yeah, I mean, that's interesting that I even said that. Maybe I didn't really listen to it that much. Who knows? Maybe I was just smoking a lot of weed. I don't know. But yeah, no, that's a dope record.
Well, it's funny because when the quarantine hit, everyone panicked. You know, how am I going to DJ? How am I going to perform? But I think radio had nothing to worry about. It's probably one of the only professions where it didn't really matter too much.
That's true. That's true. And you know, just being like a producer and working from home and all that stuff, you know, like, yeah, I was just grateful to be able to still do what I love, you know, still be able to make some money and stuff like that. I mean, it was definitely a struggle for a lot of people. So, yeah, I think the pandemic was, yeah, it was definitely hard for a lot of people, but I think for other people, it was kind of like a natural thing, or just, you know, it didn't affect their lifestyle that much. So,
what was it? WTUL at Tulane University. That's kind of where it started.
That's right. 1998, TUL. And, you know, even that, doing that show still, you know, has an effect today. Like I met like close friends down there, my man Tariq Thornton, who is kind of the A&R to all the stuff that I do and is a huge part of just, yeah, like my career.
He set this up.
And yeah, he's a DJ. He lives in Minneapolis and he's a dope DJ as well. But I DJ with him in New Orleans and we became close. We ended up roommates in New York, and you know, he was real good friends with Sean Price, and this is a lot of connections throughout the years. But he's been a you know, I definitely want to shout him out. He's been an important part of my career. And but it all started in New Orleans, WTUL.
When you were a freshman there, you injured yourself and you needed crutches. What happened?
I had what's called juvenile rheumatoid arthritis since I was 8, which is like a autoimmune degenerative disease that basically strips out the cartilage in your joints. I had basically no more cartilage in my hip. And so I had to have this surgery, like after I graduated high school, to fuse my hip together. And yeah, so that shit was kind of crazy. I had to be on crutches for half the year, wear this big body cast. So yeah, shouts to Tariq for helping carry my records and all that back then. And, you know, but then, and then the following year I broke my femur in half, throwing a baseball. And so, yeah. And so I had the same thing again, a lot of health things, during that time. Well, really throughout, but that was definitely crazy.
I mean, you should go back to Tulane and see if they, you know, updated their accessibility, see if they have some elevators, see if they have some ramps.
No doubt.
So where did you quarantine? Were you in Brooklyn?
I was in Brooklyn. Yep. In Brooklyn the whole time. I don't think I even really went anywhere. I usually go out to Cali a lot, with family out there and just know a lot of homies, but I think I was pretty much in Brooklyn the whole time.
Do you live in the vegan ice cream Pilates gentrified section, or what's the landscape like around there?
Yeah, it's definitely become that. I live in Greenpoint, and it's changed drastically over the last like 10. So I've been in Greenpoint for about like 11, 12 years now, and it's changed dramatically. It's wild. Still a huge like Polish contingency out here, but then you got the gentrification for sure. And yeah. So, but before that I lived in Queens in Astoria for many years. But
are you familiar with Screamer's Pizza?
I live across the street. I live across the street. Shouts to Lil Fame from MOP. He's a huge fan of Screamer's. He eats there every time he comes to the lab. He was here last night, and I don't think he got Screamer's, but he usually does. You know, it's a good spot.
Small world. And it's funny because when Marco Polo came on, we discussed the literal port authority. And I wasn't planning on it, but did you know that the New York Times ran a story 2 months ago that the BQE is crumbling and the Mayor Adams has no plans to fix it because the expressway is crumbling from the road salt and the moisture that has weakened the foundation, and from all the overweight trucks, because, you know, this thing was built in the 40s. They didn't have Mack trucks. They had like Ford Model Ts. So it was never built to handle like modern machinery and stuff like that. So those days might be numbered.
I'm not surprised. I mean, I feel like the BQE has been in construction literally every time I've been on it, it's in construction. So, I'm not surprised. That shit is like the worst.
If it does go away, you got to release a BQE too, and, you know, kind of in memoriam.
Yeah. I thought about another BQE thing, but, you know, I kind of moved on from that, did the high powered cruise control, sequels are always a little tricky. You know what I mean?
You mentioned Astoria. That is where you met Big Noid Queens at a barbershop?
Yeah. I met him at the barbershop. Shouts to Boti over there in Astoria. And I had met him a couple times on like him coming up to halftime with Mobb Deep. But it was, you know, we connected at the barbershop. I lived kind of close, right, super close in Astoria. So we connected, and yeah, we ended up just having a bunch of sessions and made some joints. And he was, he's the homie, man. Still a good friend. And that was definitely early. Like that was, he kind of gave me my first shot at actually producing, really, like my first real placement was like on his record.
When you met him, he Episodes of a Hustler was already released.
Correct.
So, yeah. I guess 20 years ago, Only the Strong comes out. Essentially, it's half produced by Alchemist, yep, half produced by Havoc. How much effort did you put in to try to get placement on that album?
I think that actually had come out already before I really became cool with Noid. I'm trying to think. He probably came up to promote that on halftime, but I don't. But at that time, we weren't, you know, kicking it and recording. I think when we started kicking it, it was the album. Fuck, it was on Monopoly Records. I want to say, forget the name of the record, but I'm pretty sure it was after Only the Strong. I would have wanted to get on that shit. Absolutely.
Well, the first beat was Crazy Ass Click. Let's just say, you know, going back, how much did you make on that beat? In contrast of like, because obviously the price, yesterday's price is not today's price, and I'm sure it's changed a lot.
Oh, how much? Oh, shit. Yeah, no, I don't even think I got any bread for those two beats I produced.
Oh, man.
I don't think I got anything. I produced My Rhyme on there and Crazy Ass Click. I think he fucked up the credits on My Rhyme and he gave it to my homie Mario, Justin Mario, who actually did Radio Wit down in New Orleans as well. But at that point, I wasn't even thinking about bread, really. You know what I mean? I was just trying to make shit. He was the homie, and it was more, it is what it is. But I don't think I received any actual compensation for that, you know. But that's paying your dues, man. You know what I'm saying? So it's all good.
Paying your dues, yeah. So let's talk about this this new album. This is your, you just said you don't like sequel albums, so just because you and Crime Apple have worked more than once, this is by no means a sequel album. Correct. It's just another project.
Yeah, Breakfast in Heretic. It's another project. It definitely has a different, I think, a different vibe to it than Wet Dirt. It's a little more polished, a little more like, I don't know. It has a little bit of a different sound to me. So, and yeah, we thought about doing a Wet Dirt part two, but I'm happy that we kind of went a different direction with this one a little bit. So yeah, sequels are tricky.
I listened to it and it's great.
Thank you.
I was curious though, from a literal sense, like what's so good about, I've been to Prague. What's so good about having breakfast in Prague?
It's basically, Prime and I did a festival out there. It's called Hip Hop Camp. It's been a festival going on for many years, out there in kind of the boonies of Czech Republic, this place, Hradec. I don't even think I'm saying it right. We had a memorable show there, a memorable tour. And I forget exactly the breakfast aspect, but it's, yeah. But basically, that's what it's from. You know what I mean? From that experience. It's kind of personal experience or whatever. And yeah, that's why we named it that.
You know, Alchemist has a terrible reputation in the Czech Republic. Every time he digs, he leaves records all over the place.
Yeah. I went digging at a spot in, I think it was in Prague. And the dude, the owner was like, I was just here. And he went through, you know, crates and crates as usual. But yeah, it's a dope city though, man. Prague is crazy. You said you've been there?
Yeah, I was there for a business conference once. And it's okay. The only thing I really took away from it is everything's brown. Everything's like drab. It's a great country, but there's no color infused in their landscapes.
I think a lot of the countries around there are like that, you know, kind of like post-Cold War like style. I don't know. It's like, yeah, very dreary.
Yep. So I was kind of taken aback by that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, so when you enter a record store, do you take the advice to spend more time in the rock section? Do you kind of go off the beaten path and that's how you find your good samples?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, I think I've gotten a little bit, I've kind of switched around over the years, you know, what I'm looking for, what sections I'll spend more time. And definitely, yeah, I think dependent on where I'm at, that does play a part. And of course, just like my knowledge of that place's music and their artists would dictate where I might spend more time. Czech Republic, they got a lot of funky shit, you know, from the 70s, rock stuff, psych, you know, even soul stuff from those eras that I probably saw. So I'd probably spend time like in that world, even pop stuff actually from that time, from like the 70s, a lot of dope shit.
Well, the first album that you and Crime Apple made, I know it was organic. You know, you met up on the weekends. The goal was to make a cohesive album where you can kind of put it on and not skip a track. And you guys accomplished that goal and you guys became friends. So when you revisit the idea of doing another album, do you just say, let's make another one? Or do you just switch up the blueprint? Do you kind of approach it differently?
Yeah, I'd say we pretty much just kind of start recording and see what we come up with and kind of go from there, as like a foundation. I think that's kind of how I approach a lot of the stuff where it's, usually, yeah, like even like the record I did with Twin, Billy Ocean, Big Twin, where it's like kind of has a certain sound to it. It kind of started from, yeah, like just the beginning, the foundations of recording, coming up with some songs and then hearing that. And then trying to build something that's cohesive from that foundation.
So what Master Ace is to Marco Polo is Crime Apple to DJ Skiz?
Crime is, you know, he's done a lot of stuff with various producers, Muggs, of course, and his crew. But yeah, no, I think we do have a great chemistry. You know, he's the homie, and I think that we'll probably end up doing more stuff. You know, another album is definitely possible. So yeah, it's kind of like that in a way.
All right, man. Anything else that, you know, I kind of want to give you the floor, you know, any future projects, anything you want to say about this one where people can find you? I'll leave it to you.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm on social media here and there. DJ Skiz Beats, .com is my website. DJ Skiz on the gram and on Twitter. Yeah. I got the new album with Crime Apple called Breakfast in Heretic. And it's out everywhere. Check it out. You know what I mean? Shit. But I got, you know, a lot of stuff coming up. A beat tape kind of thing coming up soon. And then been working a lot with different artists, Lil Fame. A lot of Crime Apple is definitely possible. Another album. And some other stuff. But yes, just, you know, that's about it, man. You know what I mean? Check me out on all the socials. And I appreciate you, man. Appreciate you for having me.
You got any reggaeton beat tapes coming out?
No reggaeton beat tapes, but I do think Marco has been working on some reggaeton. He was dropping like a reggaeton beat the other day when he was at the crib, and I was trying to push him to get into that world. So
there you go. Yeah. Well, brother, I'm out of questions. But as a former radio guy, I hope I made you proud to stamp your name on this conversation, man. I'm honored. And
you definitely did. You definitely did, man. I really appreciate it. And yeah, keep doing your thing, man. For sure.